to Truth Jihad Radio. You're listening to Gilad Atzmon, one of the great free thinkers of our time. You can hear Gilad and a whole lot of the other great free thinkers of our time right here on Truth Jihad Radio. And you can keep these radio shows coming by going to truthjihad.com and giving a one-time donation with a PayPal button, or better yet, subscribing. For $3.95 a month, you get early access and free downloads. Plus, you get access to my private blog where I've been posting interesting stuff lately. So please do go to truthjihad.com. Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. Kevin Barrett, bringing you all kinds of fascinating news that you're never going to hear from the fake news mainstream. Oh my God, I just borrowed an expression from President Trump. Oh, that was a mistake. I'll probably have to pay him for the copyright there. Anyway, I bring on a lot of good guests and a few goofy ones, but my guest today is one of the very, very, very good ones, one of the very best 9/11 people, in fact, and that would be Barbara Honegger. Barbara Honegger is author of October Surprise. She's done amazing work on various aspects of 9/11, including the Pentagon, the anthrax case, and others. And she's also been a key figure in many of the best activist initiatives, including the Boston Tea Party for 9/11 Truth and the Third Beam, representing Building 7 on the 9/11 commemoration anniversary, and so on and so forth. So Barbara is a major figure in the truth movement, and she has a lot to say. So let's hear it. Welcome, Barbara Honegger. How are you?
Oh, hi. Hi, Kevin. Yeah, amazing synchronistic breaking news. While we're doing this, recording this interview, which is now March 2nd, 2017, amazingly synchronistic breaking news.
And isn't it interesting that I've got you, the author of the original October Surprise book, the real October Surprise book that Gary Sick, the very establishment guy, kind of, well, you could almost say plagiarized or sort of followed up on, but your October Surprise book about what happened back in the, it's a Jimmy Carter coup d'etat that took out Carter and replaced him with the Reagan Bush team that you worked for, that you're an expert in this business of presidential campaigns where one side goes off, and it seems to usually be the Republican side, but in this case, it's history is repeating itself, goes off and talks to a foreign government to try to help their guy get elected. Nixon did it by working to torpedo the peace talks, which would have gotten Hubert Humphrey elected. And then we have the October Surprise that overthrew Jimmy Carter that you've written your book about. And today we have a similar situation where the Trump camp stands accused of contact with the evil Russians. And if you read Veterans Today, where I work, even worse, contact with Mikhail Friedman, the last surviving mega billionaire Russian Jewish oligarch who had a direct line set up to the Trump camp during the campaign, Friedman being a very close friend of Netanyahu. So this is amazing stuff. And Barbara, you're the perfect person to talk to. So, hey, lay it on us.
Okay. Well, I just want to make clear for your listeners that the last time that we know of that high-level officials from a U.S. presidential campaign colluded, and there's no question in my mind, we'll get into why, I not just believe but know that, that high-level U.S. presidential election officials colluded with what you could call a rival or an adversarial, or some are even calling a hostile foreign government, similar to the breaking news today on March 1st and 2nd, today's March 2nd, 2017, that even Attorney General Jeff Sessions was meeting twice, at least twice that we know of, with the Russian ambassador prior to the election of Donald Trump, after we already know that Michael Flynn, who had to be forced out as Trump's first national security advisor, did so, and top people from the Trump campaign, including even the then chairman of the Trump campaign, Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, who was billed as a senior advisor to the Trump campaign, Carter Page, who was a senior advisor to the Trump campaign. Sessions was even billed as a top foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign and was the first senator, United States senator, to support Donald Trump. All of these people were in contact with the Russians before the election. Well, the last time anything like that happened was the subject of my book, October Surprise, which was in October of 1980, i.e. the title of the book, October Surprise, when the Reagan-Bush senior campaign, a Republican campaign, colluded, not just met with, but colluded with the Khomeini regime in Iran to delay the release of our 52 hostages then held illegally under international law, of course, in Iran, in exchange for a promise of future arms to Iran to fight the then going Iran-Iraq war in order to defeat President Carter, which was high treason.
Yeah, well, it was
that
also
has
treason.
Now been confirmed.
It was also treason to the Iranians in the sense that the Reagan administration ended up massively favoring Saddam against the Iranians and just gave the Iranians little bits of junk.
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't say bits of junk. We know that there were at least $5 billion worth of arms that went to Iran. The real story, from my analysis, which is very informed, you can imagine, is that the Reagan-Bush administration, Bush senior administration, once they got in power, along with the Israelis as middleman, simply fueled the Iran-Iraq war, which resulted in at least a million deaths on both sides, both Iran and Iraq, in order to, again, carry out Israel's foreign policy interests of weakening two of their alleged enemies, Iran and Iraq.
That's right. Quick question here. A lot of folks in the so-called alternative media community are sort of poo-pooing all of this stuff about Trump's campaign being in touch with the Russians by saying, well, aren't the Russians the relatively good guys? Now, have these people been watching too much RT or what?
I don't quite understand your question.
Well, the question would be, a lot of folks say, okay, Hillary Clinton was about to blow up the world by starting World War III against the Russians, that the U.S. is encroaching on Russia everywhere, encircling Russia with bases.
Right.
It tore up its solemn promise to never extend NATO even one inch eastward. The U.S. is committing daily horrific aggression against everybody, especially Russia. So the Russians are the good guys, and the best thing that could possibly happen would be to put Putin or a Putin stooge in the White House.
Oh, well, if you're asking for my take on that, that's all true.
Okay.
There's no question that the United States and NATO violated the promise to Gorbachev. It was George Bush Sr.'s promise to Gorbachev that if the Soviet Union collapsed or folded, whatever, that NATO would in turn promise not to expand east. Well, they violated their promise. Okay, so there's no question whatsoever that there are two bad guys. the Russians are aggressive and we're aggressive. We're back into a Cold War stance. We really are back into a Cold War stance, and neither side does the right thing. But then that's was the nature of the Cold War.
But
wait,
Barbara, how aggressive are the Russians? Really aggressive? I mean, in Ukraine, didn't basically the Russians behave reasonably, whereas Victoria Nuland used $5 billion to overthrow the democratically elected reasonable government of Ukraine, which was getting a good deal for the Ukrainian people from Russia, and replace it with a crazed Nazi Zionist oligarch regime.
Oh, there's no question. I agree with that.
And how about Syria?
I agree with that.
Russia's on the right side in Syria too, right?
Well, I'm not an expert on Syria, but I agree with you completely that Victoria Nuland, who of course is married to Robert Kagan, who in turn was the chief person in the Project for New American Century manifesto that called for the new Pearl Harbor and was the neocons were of course behind 9/11. These people are vicious, and they were agent provocateurs to Russia. There's no question about it, and in my mind, Crimea used to be part of Russia until, what was it, 1950, you can tell me. I mean, there's no question in my mind that if there was a plebiscite and the people of Crimea said that they wanted to be part of Russia, that's all fine. I mean, the United States and the West always calls on self-determination of nations, right? Mm-hmm. So, no, we're not the good guys in this either. But the point of what's happening in the news right now, regardless of who's right and who's wrong, it is a fact that Paul Manafort, who was the chairman of the Trump campaign until forced out in August because of the revelations that it is this Paul Manafort who was essentially the campaign manager for the pro-Russian president of Ukraine, who was forced out by this neo-Nazi coup that was orchestrated by Victoria Nuland, Kagan's wife, who in turn was doing so for Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. So I think it's a good thing that Hillary Clinton didn't win. I do believe that we could have easily had World War III with nuclear weapons if she was too aggressive against Russia. It's a good thing. I ran as the Bernie Sanders independent here in California Congressional District 20. I was against both Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
So I just want to go on.
Well, I would definitely vote for you on that one.
Well, I'd vote for you if I lived in your state too.
Okay. Well, you have to wait till I run, but that might be a while. Anyway, so it's getting really interesting, isn't it? With Sessions, you know, now being accused, some are even accusing him of perjury for testifying to Congress that he had no contact with Russians when he supposedly had at least a couple of conversations with the Russian ambassador. And so the Democrats are calling for a 9/11 style commission to get to the bottom of this. Wait a minute. 9/11
right,
commission didn't get to the bottom of anything.
Right, right. Well, some of the top Democrats are calling just for a recusal. Others are calling, like Nancy Pelosi, for him to resign. Others are calling for, I wish they didn't use the term, a, quote, dispassionate, unquote, 9/11 commission-like investigation of potential Trump collusion with the Russians during the campaign. Of course, you and I, of all people, know, and our listeners already know, that the 9/11 commission was a bloody cover-up and a whitewash. It was anything but dispassionate. So in my opinion, the only thing that would work is a true independent prosecutor investigation. The problem is, in order for that to happen, you need catch-22, the attorney general, to allow the appointment of a special prosecutor. So they have to get rid of Sessions and get somebody in there who would be appointed by Trump. We're in a true catch-22 here. We really are. So the only thing that's going to break this thing open and result in the Republicans being shamed and forced into allowing a special prosecutor, and I want to go on record with this, the only thing, in my opinion, that is going to break this thing open is for at least one member of the House or the Senate who are in the Senate or House intelligence committees to have the courage of Mike Gravel and to go public with what they already know from their classified briefings on the floor of the House and the Senate and get it into the congressional record and break this thing open. And as you know, it was the promise and the threat, the cocked gun, of doing precisely that with the 28 pages, which was my original vision that I took to Mike Gravel himself, former Senator Mike Gravel, and then Mike Gravel got it, and Mike Gravel went to Washington, D.C., and walked into the offices of the top members of the House and the Senate who had already read the 28 pages of the House Senate Intelligence Committee Joint Investigation of 9/11, and reminded them that they had the authority under the Constitution, that they had 100% immunity for anything they say on the floor of the House or the Senate, including even stolen classified information. That is a decision of the United States Supreme Court.
So, but what do you think they have? I mean, is there any indication that the members of the Senate and House Intelligence Committees actually have information so explosive that it would force the Trump administration to allow for a real investigation?
I have no question of that. And for any of your listeners who haven't already read the infamous or famous, depending upon what side of the political spectrum you're on, but this famous so-called dossier. I've sent you, Kevin, the link to it where everybody can read the text. I hope you can get that link on the website, No Lies Radio website, for the audio, with the audio file of this interview, so that everyone can read the dossier for themselves. When that dossier came out a few months ago, and there was an explosion in the mainstream media and press about it, the White House, the Trump White House, said, oh, there's nothing here, folks. This is not credible. Move along. Nothing to see. That, once you read it, you know that isn't true. And when you find out who wrote it, who did the research, the investigation, the dot connecting, and wrote this report before the election, this report is done by a man by the name of Christopher Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E. And then you learn that Christopher Steele had been British intelligence, MI6's top covert operator spy in Moscow. You cannot get any more credible than that.
And then his Russian source got whacked. You saw that, right?
Which one?
I forget the guy's name, but it was the main, supposedly, according to the news stories, the main Russian source for Steele died in an obvious assassination. That was just, a few weeks after it went public.
Yes. Now, that's the real rub here. Because, and this is clear in the Washington Post and New York Times articles that just came out yesterday and today that are causing this explosion yet in the press, about evidence and claims for Trump campaign collusion with the Russians to influence the U.S. presidential election, like the October surprise. And the real rub is that if the sources, in order for the media to get the information to the American public in a way that the American public and especially Trump voters understand that this is real and not fake and not ginned up just to discredit Trump, is you have to identify the sources. But when you do that, the Russians will kill them, just like they did him. That's the catch-22 that we're in. But there is a way. There is a way to get around the catch-22, and that is precisely what Mike Gravel did for the 28 pages. The director of litigation for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth, Mick Harrison, and myself, and Daniel Sheehan, who is a world-famous attorney here in the Monterey Peninsula where I live, we worked on a law review article which goes into the entire background of not only Gravel versus U.S., which was the decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, that is very explicit, that Mike Gravel, when he read a portion of the famous Pentagon Papers on the true history of the Vietnam War into the congressional record on the floor of the Senate and congressional hearing room, that he was completely 100% immune from even being questioned by any other branch of government, by the judiciary or the executive, let alone any legal retaliation. He was 100% immune. So the way we get around it and to get enough information into the public domain for every single person in the world to understand that there was collusion between the Trump campaign, the highest levels of the Trump campaign, and the Russians before the election to influence the election, for better or worse. I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton would have been better. I don't think she would have. So I'm not talking about the outcome. I'm talking about the process, this illegal process that went on. Is the only way to get around that catch-22 is for a courageous, it only takes one, a courageous member of the House or the Senate Intelligence Committees who already know this information to say what they know about it from their intel briefings by the FBI
but wait,
others.
How's that going to help? Because, okay, like we already have this report from Christopher Steele. It's out there. We all know he's behind it, and we know he had these sources, and at least one of them has been assassinated. We know all that.
Well, he's just one. He's
right.
just one of the British intelligence sources, but there's also, we now know, the Dutch. We also know that there are other allies, including the Czechs, who were reporting this to the Obama administration, that they were monitoring these contacts between top Trump administration representatives and the Russians.
So you think the people on the intelligence committees have essentially really strong confirmation of these kinds of allegations that are in this dossier?
Yes, I do, and I believe that that the members of the Intelligence Committee who asked the questions of Attorney General, then Attorney General nominee, in his confirmation hearing, asked the questions of him, already know the information. They were basically trying to checkmate him, and they have effectively checkmated him.
Interesting. Wow. So just to step back a bit and try to figure this out. Okay, we've got at the time that Trump was in Moscow and that he allegedly compromised himself by hiring Russian prostitutes to sully the bed that had been slept in by Obama, which is a very bizarre
kind
of story.
That's the claim. That's weird.
Right.
Sick, yeah.
So at that time, was he already planning to run for president and purposely incriminating himself with the Russians so the Russians would then jump on board and support his campaign? Or, I mean,
Oh, of course not. No, that was years before.
Yeah,
that was years before.
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
So why all the contact with Russia then during the campaign?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
These are the kinds of explosive allegations in this dossier, but what specifically did Russia do to help elect Trump? We know that Russia today gave him favorable coverage. Okay, well, that's fine. They would do that whether or not he was talking to them.
The Russians hacked the Democratic National Committee, mm-hmm. and the Russians hacked other Democratic Party organizations. There's a second major one that they hacked, according to all of our intelligence agencies' consensus. That information, in turn, was provided to WikiLeaks, and then WikiLeaks put it out. And Trump even called in a public address for the Russians to put out even more of Hillary Clinton's emails. Now, there's a moral question here, and again, I am glad that Hillary Clinton didn't win. So let me be clear about that. This is not about the outcome of the election. It's about the illegal process. The same thing was true about the October surprise. So it's this mentality that the ends justify the means. So what the Russians did was they hacked. They weren't the only ones who hacked, of course. Everybody hacks. But the Russians got information from the emails of Hillary Clinton and John Podesta, her campaign manager. They put them out in a way that embarrassed the Hillary Clinton campaign and campaign chairman and others that were truly embarrassing. And it was important for the public to know that information. Those emails were real. They were never denied by Hillary Clinton or anybody else in her campaign, by John Podesta or anybody else. What the Russians did effectively was to inform the American voting public about who Hillary Clinton really was, and they voted against her.
WikiLeaks insist that this was not the Russians that hacked these?
They do say that. I don't believe it.
Okay, well,
I'll tell you why I don't believe it.
Okay.
Because Roger Stone, before the election, bragged about his communications with WikiLeaks. Meeting with WikiLeaks, okay? Mm-hmm. And Roger Stone is one of the four top campaign officials, Michael Flynn, Roger Stone, Carter Page, and Paul Manafort. Those are the four that are focused on in the dossier and that are being focused on right now by the FBI investigation and the investigations of the House Senate Intelligence Committee, among others. Now, of course, there's Jeff Sessions as well, Attorney General of the United States. So Roger Stone, this is very interesting. It's also very synchronistic because before the election, I think I was on at least four times, maybe five, on a radio show called The Other Side of Midnight. So you might be aware of Richard Hoagland's program. And one of the last of those shows that I was on because I'd already been on three or four times, their producer, Ms. M, called me up in advance of a special show that they were about to do. And they were kind of, letting their listeners know that there was going to be a special surprise guest coming up to try to get a very large listenership. This is a radio online radio program. And it turns out she called me up in advance and she said, this special surprise guest is going to be Roger Stone. And Richard Hoagland would like you, Barbara, because you're, you know, a really good investigator, would like you to do a background research on Roger Stone and get that report to us before the program. Well, I did that. It took me a week. I investigated Roger Stone, and I will send you, Kevin, my research report.
Yeah, he's okay? Basically one of the all-time great dirty tricks political operators, isn't he?
He calls himself Mr. Dirty Tricks for the Republican Party, and that he is. He was effectively responsible for George W. Bush becoming president and stealing the election in Florida. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is one of the most heinous individuals on the planet, mm-hmm. and he bragged. He went on that show and he bragged about his communications with WikiLeaks.
Okay.
So I do not believe that Assange when he says that there was no Russian connection.
So do you think Assange is corrupt? I know at Veterans Today,
no,
some of the
no,
people
I
there
don't.
Do.
No, I just think he lied about that particular thing. Because Assange hates Hillary Clinton. Okay. Assange and the Russians and the Trump campaign had a common interest in defeating Hillary Clinton. I think it's a good thing she was defeated. Don't get me wrong about that. I ran as a Bernie Sanders independent.
So we should give them all medals and then slap them all in jail.
The ends do not justify treasonous means.
Not even saving the planet from World War III?
I wanted Bernie Sanders. I didn't. I believe, okay, let's talk about how dangerous Trump is, okay? I sent you the PowerPoint slide for a presentation that I made just 3 nights ago in Santa Cruz, California. And as you know, at the beginning of my presentation, I pulled together the evidence that is truly disturbing about not just Stephen Bannon's inflaming of the white supremacist Aryan Nation, so-called neo-Nazis in the United States, but Trump himself. Trump's bedside reading was Hitler's compiled speeches. We know this from under oath sworn deposition by his first wife, Ivana, who is the mother of Ivanka, who is the beautiful blonde, you know, who's
she's part of the master race for sure, Barbara.
She certainly looks Aryan, doesn't she? And she's converted to Orthodox Judaism, by the way, which I find fascinating because of her Orthodox Orthodox
husband. Now she's really part of the master race.
Jared Kushner. Yeah. Okay. So let's just understand that both Hillary Clinton and Trump are dangerous for different reasons. Okay. Trump is truly dangerous. His bedside reading was Hitler's compiled speeches. There are two volumes of that book. The second volume has recently been republished, and I sent you in the PowerPoint slide I just gave in Santa Cruz a few days ago, the cover of the newly republished second edition of Hitler's compiled speeches. It's called My New Order, is the title they've given it, and it has both Hitler and Trump's photographs on the cover. Okay. And Trump used his slogan, America First, you know, that's taken directly from the America First Committee and the America First Party that was pro-Hitler, pro-Nazi in the lead up to and during World War II.
So that's like an American version of Deutschland über alles?
Yeah. And the white supremacist organizations before the campaign and before the election, during the campaign, and since, they refer to Trump as the long-awaited glorious leader, i.e. the Führer. And he didn't, he retweeted white genocide. There's this website, White Genocide. He would retweet their tweets. Up to 40, 45 times. This is Trump himself before the election. Mm-hmm. This is an extremely dangerous individual. So, and what's interesting is Putin is a white Christian nationalist supremacist in his own country.
Really? So what's the evidence for that? I know he's Christian, but where's the white supremacism?
Well, this is let's just say it's my opinion. Okay, I think that what these two men have in common is that they are anti-Muslim, pro-Christian, so-called pro-Christian, even though they don't behave like them, do they? So-called pro-Christian, white supremacists, and that they see and that the real reason for their anti-Islam, anti-Muslim campaign is because most Muslims aren't white. That is my belief.
Okay, well, I'd like to see more evidence on that for Putin anyway, because the you know, the armed forces of Russia is like 60-70% Muslim, and it's true that Putin came to power with that false flag apartment bombing. The KGB blew up some Russian apartments, murdered hundreds of Russians, blamed it on the Muslim Chechens, who've been perennial genocide victims in Russia.
Right.
And that's what brought Putin into power with his special powers under this emergency. So there is that. But on the other hand...
Yeah, that was Putin's 9/11 that raised him to power.
But basically, though, it seems to me he is... primarily opposed to this sort of Saudi Wahhabi deviation of Islam, which is actually cultivated by the enemies of Islam, the Zionists among them. So I'm not so sure that I would categorize Putin as anti-Islam.
Okay, well, you might be right about that. You're more of an expert on that than I am. And I do believe that Trump is also has common cause with Putin to defeat the Wahhabi, the Saudi Wahhabis. There's no question in my mind about that. So that would be a good thing.
Yeah, frankly, I think Islam would be better off if we could put a cap on these Wahhabis. They've got all that oil money, and they're really causing a whole lot of trouble and disruption, and making Islam look really bad.
Yes, by design, right?
It sure seems that way. The British cultivated them. The Zionists, the Americans have made sure that these crazed Wahhabis have billions and billions of petrodollars to play with and influence all the mosques all over America, all over the world. It's very convenient because, you know, if you try to explain Islam to people now, they have this bizarre notion based on this bizarre Saudi deviation from Islam.
Yes, yes. And Trump is also going out of his way to conflate Islam with the Wahhabi what's the right word
I'd call the Wahhabis a sect, but you know they're an extremist sect that is primarily interested in harassing and often attacking and killing other Muslims. So they're very convenient for the enemies of Islam because they're just, you know, and the Takfiris, who are extremist Wahhabis, are purely interested in attacking their fellow Muslims. So these guys are really a fifth column within the House of Islam.
Yes, no question about it, and I think that Trump really wants to eliminate them. But I would like
so
to
he must
just
be a secret Muslim.
Yeah, right. I don't think so. I would like to make explicit something that you've probably mentioned on your show before. Although, by the way, I would like to talk about your trip to Iran, and I just got back from Egypt. So,
cool.
2 weeks in Egypt. So, I have some very interesting comments about what's going on there. But I would like to point out that the alleged number two of Al Qaeda, who was allegedly killed today or yesterday by a drone strike in Syria, he's Egyptian. Okay, and if you, of course, you and I know that the alleged 19 hijackers really didn't do the 9/11 attacks with the four planes, but nevertheless, that's the official story. The official story claims that Mohammed Atta was the lead hijacker and pilot on the first plane to hit the World Trade Center 1. Well, he was an Egyptian, okay? And Sheikh Abdul Rahman, who allegedly he recently died about a week ago, he allegedly was behind the so-called spiritual mastermind behind the 1993 attack on World Trade Center 1, if you believe the government, but of course the FBI really did it itself. He's an Egyptian. So there's
and
this
the
Egyptian
don't forget the
connection.
Wahiri. The Wahiri, that supposed number
one. Yeah, I
was
going to say, we were also told some time ago that he was, after bin Laden was allegedly killed, by the raid in Abbottabad, which we know is a lie because he really died in December of 2001, and was, quote, kept alive, unquote, to keep the Al-Qaeda myth going and so that we could justify being in the Middle East and killing everybody for Israel. Al-Zawahiri, the alleged number two under bin Laden in Al-Qaeda, he was also Egyptian. So we have this Egyptian connection, and yet Egypt is not one of the seven countries that at all that Trump is, you know, has this ban, this blanket ban on anyone coming from those countries into the United States for a few months. It's not, and not Pakistan, not Egypt,
not
Saudi Arabia, which the official story says 15 of the alleged, underline alleged, 19 hijackers of 9/11 came from Saudi Arabia. None of these countries that we know, their people, according to the government itself, their own claims, attacked America on our own homeland and killed thousands of people. They're not on the list of countries.
Right. So something's wrong here. How can people not understand
this?
Something's
wrong with this picture.
Yes. Absolutely. It's completely crazy. So, yeah, these countries that Trump is banning are six out of seven, I believe, are the same as those seven countries in 5 years, as you said, that Clark told us was basically that's why they did 9/11, was to take out these seven countries in 5 years. And those are the countries that pose a problem for Israel. So basically, this is all about harassing countries that Israel doesn't like.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I would also just like to go on the record, and this is an intuition, all right? But I believe that we're going to find out that Trump's wife, Melania, was instrumental in the collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians.
Really?
Yes, I do.
And your intuition, okay?
Yes, it's an intuition. It's very strange that she's not in the White House, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know that they've given this excuse, in my opinion, that she's, you know, staying in New York because her son is still in school and all of that. She's, you know, got to be a good wife and mother and take care of him. I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a minute. There's something else going on. And there's a kind of one of these rags, these supermarket rags right now in the supermarkets here anyway in the Central Coast of California with Melania's picture on the cover and the fact that she's out of her element, that she doesn't know what to do, that she is very hesitant to take a role, etc. That she's very uncomfortable with what's going on.
Well, there have been some interesting Melania stories, Barbara. Of course, at the inauguration, there's that famous video clip where Trump, you know, turns to her and she puts on this plastic smile. And then when Trump turns around and is looking away from her, her face just collapses into the most depressed, god-awful look. Like, you know, it looks like she's, you know, a lot of people have said it looks like she's abused by him.
Well, that could be. The article on the front page of the supermarket rag right now here in California anyway is that she is in fact depressed. One wonders what's really behind that. We don't know, but I'm just telling you that because of her background,
you gotta be careful what you say about Melania, because remember how she sued Webster Tarpley, who repeated something he read in one of those British tabloids that Melania, when she was allegedly a model, was actually a high class prostitute. Now I didn't say she was, folks. Melania, if you're listening, I didn't say that. I'm just saying what Tarpley repeated that was originally in some stupid British tabloid, and then you, Melania, went all over and sued Webster Tarpley, who is obviously not the richest guy, because when we've gotten him to conferences, Barbara, he insists you have to buy him meals at the airport to get him to a conference. That guy is dirt poor. And yet Melania Trump is like trying to bleed him with a lawsuit. Give me a break.
Right. Well, I made it very clear that this is my intuition and opinion, which is completely protected by the First Amendment. So go ahead and sue me. I'll see you in court.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's all very, it's kind of sad in a way when people get into the limelight, then they are going to suffer a lot from this kind of, you know, scrutiny that often goes way over the top. So I kind of feel for her, and it probably is pretty tough being married to a guy like Trump in the first place. So, you know, I kind of feel sorry for her in a way. When I see her suing Webster Tarpley, it's not only Webster I feel sorry for. I feel sorry for her too.
Yeah, by the way, what happened to the Tarpley lawsuit?
Well, he ended up paying a quote-unquote substantial sum. But he can't talk about it. He's under a gag order. And so Melania announced that Trump has agreed to settle for a substantial sum. Now, for Webster Tarpley, probably $100 is a pretty substantial sum. The way he acts when you try to get him to go to a conference, it's like, you know, he goes after every penny, fights and claws and snarls for every penny. I mean, so obviously, you know, when the Trumps say it's a substantial sum to the Trumps would probably be about 10,000 times Tarpley's net worth.
Right, that's possible. Well, you know, if you just it's available on the internet. If people just read the under oath deposition of Trump's first wife, and I don't think he's changed his stripes. You know, he's 70 years old, and he's married to Melania now. If you read the reasons that she gave for why she wanted her divorce, and she did that under oath, you realize who this person really is, and there would be reason for Melania to be depressed. But it is my opinion that if we got to the bottom of what's in the news today, that there could very well be, it's an opinion, a connection to Melania.
Interesting. Well, Barbara, why do you think that our, let's face it, Jewish-dominated media, which is not entirely a bad thing, you know, I think it's pretty bad for the Palestinians and indeed for us Muslims, but in other ways it's not that terrible because the Jews who dominate much of our liberal mainstream media for the most part are basically sort of liberal, relatively educated and tolerant people. I wish they'd tell a lot more truth about 9/11, false flags, Zionism, and a lot of other things. But, you know,
exactly.
What are you going to do? So anyway, so why would those people, the people that run our media, allow somebody who reads Hitler's speeches every night as his bedside reading to get elected president? It does not compute.
Well, I don't know what you mean by allow. They obviously expected and did everything they could, the mainstream media, to get Hillary Clinton elected. You know, that's just, I think that's...
Are you sure? I mean, it seems to me a lot of the bad publicity they threw at Trump was actually very useful to Trump.
Well, yeah, if you really believe that, you know, all that matters is that you have publicity, whether it's negative or positive. I think what's happening in the news right now proves that's not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trump is a narcissist, and he's absolutely obsessed with having only positive feedback in the mainstream media. So no, I don't think that the negative, any negative publicity.
But wait a minute, there's stuff they could have reported, Barbara. Like, they, you know, Trump was basically created by Ray Cohn, who's a lieutenant of the Meyer Lansky mob, and, you know,
yes,
Trump's organized crime.
That's in my PowerPoint I sent you.
So why did the mainstream media not essentially expose Trump as this front man for organized crime?
Well, I'm going to give you my informed opinion, which is all I can do, and that is that they really, until the very end, close to the very end, they didn't think he had a chance of winning. And I'm absolutely convinced Trump was flabbergasted and surprised that he won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people
were. They didn't think he had a chance, so they didn't bother.
Right. And so now they're throwing everything they have at him, but it may not be enough because the mainstream media has lost so much credibility thanks to people like us pointing out that they lie through their teeth about all sorts of things, starting with 9/11, but, you know, going on from there. So it's our fault that Trump's president.
I would like to comment about that because the Trump, and I think I might have mentioned this to you in an email prior to doing the recording for this this program, but it's very important for people to realize that Trump's when the information came out that all 16 or 17 U.S. intelligence agencies, civilian like CIA and NSA, as well as military, had a consensus after reviewing the information, the classified information, this is a few months ago now, that they had they came out with a consensus that the Russians, in fact, had hacked the DNC and the other Democratic Party organizations, Hillary Clinton's emails and John Podesta's emails, her campaign manager, in order to attempt to influence the election against Clinton and for Trump. So the intelligence agencies all came out with this consensus. And Trump's reaction to that was, well, you can't trust the U.S. intelligence agencies. He actually used the word CIA. You cannot trust the CIA. He likened them to Nazis because, he said, we know they don't know what they're doing because they claimed there was WMD in Iraq when there wasn't. But there was, Kevin. And I have, and everybody who's listening to this program needs to go to YouTube. And you need to plug in Iraqi WMD and torture bombshell. I think there's an exclamation point at the end. Iraqi WMD and torture bombshell. It's only 27, 28 minutes. It's an explosive interview that I recently did with an amazing whistleblower, Gregory Ford. Greg Ford. His real name is Francis Gregory Ford or Frank Gregory Ford. He goes by Greg Ford, G-R-E-G. And Greg Ford was the only military medic, fully trained military medic, for his intelligence, counterintelligence group at Abu Ghraib prison. And he was the first person to file a complaint under the Geneva Conventions, under U.S. law and under military law, that the torture that he saw the effects of, because the people who were tortured there, the detainees who were tortured, when they almost died, they brought him into his clinic in order to bring him back to life and send him back. He saw the effects of the torture, and he turned them in an official complaint for doing that, for threatening to do that to his, to Colonel Ryan, I believe Colonel, anyway, Ryan, who was his commanding officer there, for doing that. He himself, Greg Ford himself, a U.S. military officer, was arrested. He was strapped to a gurney. He was tortured and he was renditioned. And he has now sued his military officers all the way to the top in the chain of command. And his suit is going to the Supreme Court. And his attorney for this case is none other than the director of litigation for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth, who is Mick Harrison and a close friend and colleague of ours. So everyone needs to see this. And what you learn here is that this same man in this YouTube interview that I did called Iraqi WMD and Torture Bombshell with Greg Ford, you also learn that Greg Ford was the individual who found the WMD in Iraq. There was WMD in Iraq. He personally found it. And then others from his unit went into the same bunker and found it. And the WMD was none other than VX nerve gas, the same VX in the liquid form in this case that was used to assassinate the half-brother of the leader of North Korea a few days ago. Hmm. All right. And this VX nerve gas, by the Pentagon's own definition, is WMD. WMD is chemical. VX nerve gas is an extremely lethal chemical weapon, chemical, biological, and nuclear. So Trump and the mainstream media misled us to believe that no WMD was found in Iraq. That is a lie.
That raises questions, Barbara. Now, I'm not going to disagree with you because I've read some other books on this topic, and clearly, well, the short version is that Rumsfeld, when asked about the Iraqi WMD, said, "Oh, we know Saddam has WMD because we kept the receipts." Right, because of course they're the ones who sold it to him. But there was still some WMD in various places in Iraq, and one of the reasons it was covered up was that it was not taken care of properly, and our troops, among others, as well as even more Iraqis, ended up getting poisoned by it, and a lot of it was not in usable condition. It was like the remnants of what they had from the Iran-Iraq War and stuff like that. But why wouldn't they say, "Aha, we found WMD. Saddam really had it, so our invasion was justified"? That's the part I don't understand.
Oh, but in my opinion, again, an informed opinion, because once once they told the truth that they found the chemical weapons, which are a form of WMD, VX nerve gas, and the 1,000-pound bombs that were used that would be used to deliver them, that Gregory Ford and others found and turned in and were destroyed, if they told the truth about that, and that was within a few days, by the way, at the very beginning of the second Iraq War, when Greg Ford and his counterintelligence and medics teams went in, if they told the truth, then there would no longer be an excuse to be there. They wanted to let us believe that they were still looking for the WMD. Well, they found it and they destroyed it. Okay. But my
why didn't Saddam use it to defend himself?
Well, that's a very good question. You'd have to ask Saddam, but he's not around.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
Ask
my sense.
He didn't.
My sense from the stuff I read, which included, I forget the name of the book, but there's a terrific book by a guy who is suffering from a whole bunch of health problems that undoubtedly came from, I think it might even be called The Burn Pits. It's about the burn pits in Iraq, where the U.S. military just threw all kinds of stuff together, plastic, medical waste, body parts,
yes, exactly,
everything into these pits and burned them up. And among the stuff that was getting burned in these burn pits was WMD. Not that they were intentionally always burning it, but it was contaminated areas. So people were being poisoned with all kinds of stuff. And that's one of the reasons why so many of our troops, as well as so many Iraqis, have been horribly poisoned. But it sounds like most of that WMD was not usable. So maybe Saddam didn't use it because it wasn't really in usable shape, meaning, therefore, it didn't really pose any threat.
The VX nerve gas canisters were usable.
Okay.
And Greg Ford was ordered and did throw them into the burn pit. And it was an arc furnace by the Brits, because we didn't have an arc furnace of a high enough temperature in order to destroy them. But the main point I'm making here is that there was WMD found in Iraq. And therefore, Trump's reason for rejecting the consensus view of all of our military and civilian intelligence agencies that the Russians did hack the election in order to try to put Trump in and defeat Hillary Clinton, that his excuse for rejecting that was that they were wrong about the WMD in Iraq. No, they were right about it.
Well,
and I'm here to tell you, just a minute, hold on, one other point I want to make. Right after my interview with Greg Ford was published on YouTube, right afterwards, none other than James Woolsey, the former director of the CIA, the head of the CIA, went on PBS News with Leslie Stahl. He went on PBS News. It's on YouTube. You can see it. He went on PBS News and he said, in response to Trump's claim, trying to discredit the intelligence community for being wrong about WMD in Iraq, he said, oh, no. There were WMD in Iraq. It was nerve gas.
Okay, but Barbara, Trump's larger point is inarguable, which is that the CIA and all the other top-level power people in the U.S. just lie. And what you've just told us just shows that they're even worse liars than even Trump says.
No, I disagree with you. The administration, the Bush-Cheney administration, misled the public and the Congress and the media to believe that it was only nuclear that they meant by WMD. It was a sin of omission when they didn't tell the truth that they did find WMD. They found highly lethal VX nerve gas.
Okay, but Barbara,
and they lied about it.
Yeah, but the larger point here is, number one, they lied that Saddam posed any threat whatsoever to the U.S. That was a lie. That he had WMD that was a serious threat to the U.S. That was a lie. Now, then they claimed we're invading for the WMD, and then they get there, and now they tell us, oh, we didn't find any WMD, and that's a lie, too. So these people are even bigger liars than even Trump says.
Okay, fine, but that's not my point. My point simply was that the specific reason Trump gave to try to discredit the consensus view of our intelligence agencies on this particular point, that the Russians did hack with the intent to put Trump in and defeat Clinton, that the reason he gave very specifically was they'd been wrong about finding WMD in Iraq. They did find WMD in Iraq, okay?
Yeah, but again, in the you know, Trump is speaking in this kind of telegraphics way that, of course, in terms of the details, it may or may not be correct. But a lot of what he says is total BS, obviously. But this particular assertion that they lied about the WMD, well, he may not have gotten the details right, but his larger point that we cannot trust a single word that any of our leaders, especially our intelligence agencies, tell us because of their lies about Iraq. And he should have added 9/11, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That point
Yes.
is inarguable.
That is inarguable, but that's not the little the specific point I'm making is that was his specific reason, and it falls apart, his reason. He
Yeah.
should have used, you're right, he should have used the broader reason.
I think if
But they
Trump
lie
went up
about
against
everything
you
else.
on this one, I think Trump would actually probably, you know, convince people pretty well. I mean, you know, but in any case, so where is this all going to go? What's going to happen with this? Is if the Democrats, are we seeing a war within the deep state, a sort of a civil war between the sort of the pro-Trump faction, which includes some of the FBI people who apparently covered up that dirty dossier about Trump and also, you know, hyped the Hillary stuff. Is there a sort of a deep state civil war going on?
There's clearly a civil war going on. I mean, the political appointees, I mean, not only is Jeff Sessions, who is complicit in this, he's now Attorney General, but under Jeff Sessions is none other than the head of the FBI, Comey, who we know, again, the ends don't justify the means, okay? We know that Comey did everything he could to defeat Clinton and put Trump in. So he's part of the problem. So he's in charge of the so-called investigation under an attorney general who is complicit. So we have a horrible situation here. There should be a special prosecutor, a truly independent special prosecutor. A 9/11-like commission is not going to be independent. It's going they're calling for a so-called bipartisan 9/11 style in so-called independent commission, a so-called dispassionate commission. We know the 9/11 commission was a bloody cover-up. So if you have people from the high levels of either political party, you are not going to get to the truth. You have to have a truly independent special prosecutor. But catch 22, you got to have the attorney general approve that.
And
So
things are so
they've
polarized.
got to get rid of Sessions. They've got to get rid of Sessions, but then Trump's just going to appoint somebody worse,
Right.
probably.
And the you know climate is so polarized that it's I don't think anybody is really going to trust anything that's coming from supposedly the other side.
Well, they're not going to trust perhaps either side, but I will tell you that the Trump administration simply cannot be trusted right now on the question of collusion by its top campaign officials and the Russians. They can't.
Okay, very interesting stuff. So we're just about at the end of the show, but before we break off, and there are other things I do want to talk with you about, Barbara. We'll have to do a follow-up show before too long. The Steve
All right.
Bannon guy, wow. We'll have to go into where is this guy coming from? Is you know it. From what I'm getting, he wants to start, you know, World War III. He wants a bigger war than World War II. He believes it's the fourth turning and we need it. That's a weird guy
Yeah, he
to.
believes it's inevitable. He
Yeah.
believes that that Armageddon is inevitable. This
Wow.
guy is extremely dangerous. There was a recent article. People can Google it. In the New York Times. It was last Sunday. It's called "What Does Steve Bannon Want?"
Yeah, I saw
I
that.
highly recommend. Perhaps, Kevin, the PowerPoint slides that I sent you from my Santa Cruz public presentation a few days ago, this past Monday, just a few days ago. There is a slide, and I'm looking at it right now. Bannon and Trump's hero was, believe it or not, Ronald Reagan. If people can Google two important articles on Bannon, it'll give you a really good idea. One is called "Combative Populist: Steve Bannon Finds His Man in Trump." That's from the New York Times, and the other one was from just this past Sunday, February 26, 2017. Quote: "What does Steve Bannon want?" Unquote. Also in the New York Times. People need to read that. Yeah, people need to read those.
I worry about that guy. Well, okay. So what? Finally, our last 30 seconds here. What do you think are the odds that Trump's going to finish his first term? 50-50 or better or worse?
A lot worse.
A lot worse. Okay, you heard it here first, folks. People here probably heard it here first that Trump was going to be president. We were predicting this here on Truth Jihad Media Radio in, I think, spring of the past year, long ahead of the election. And now you're hearing that he may not finish his first term. So we'll have to see how it plays out, and we'll have to keep checking back in with you, Barbara Honegger, one of my all-time favorite 9/11 truth researchers and activists, as well as authors. Really interesting historical perspective you bring to these things. So thank you, Barbara, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, Kevin. Talk to you again soon.
Okay, take care.